Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of my Jedi investigation squad. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello! I'm looking forward to talking about Basil tonight.
Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Also, hello. I think it's pronounced Basil. No, it's definitely Basil.
Is he an herb or a person?
So we were starting it, and Dan was like, "Oh, I was like, I think his name is Basil, like Basil, like from Sherlock Holmes." It's like, no, it was like Bostar or something. It's like, I think it was Basil.
First of all,
no, it's very it's Basil, little, but with a Z.
Very little of that happened.
No, you literally thought it was like a fancy Star Wars.
I thought it was Bazo.
That is a fancy Star Wars
that
name.
That is a fancy Star Wars name?
Yeah, the two Z's.
No, it's like Lizzo.
Just to be clear, I only know this because I watched the Star captions. Wars? And yeah.
It's Basil.
So. We had to turn the Basil. Captions on to confirm.
That I was right.
Okay.
Kat takes her victories where she can get them.
Yep. And also where she can. It's a real victory round.
Victory taking is a time-honored pastime.
Heads, you know, I win. Tails, you lose.
It's a game of chess within a game of chess that you are losing.
Constantly. So,
welcome to marriage.
We are here to discuss episode 4 of season 1 of The Acolyte, entitled Day.
Are we?
Remember when they used to have episodes that had like a slash in them? We don't do that anymore.
It was two episodes. Literally two episodes did that, and then they gave up. They're like, we couldn't think of any more.
Yeah. You know, what's the opposite of day? There is nothing.
We'll never find out.
All right, Dan wants me to do the recap. This episode is basically a walk in the woods, but it's two walks in the wood because we have basically our dark side walk in the woods with May and her pet poisoner, Manny Jacinto, going for a walk, looking for a Wookiee in the woods. And then on the other side of the woods, we have like a lot of Jedi. Like
they sense a lot.
Like
they sense a lot.
Like Jedi that do not get names, which is really doubling down on a problem we discussed two episodes ago. When you have like the more, it's the ninja problem. The more Jedi you have, the less
the sillier they are.
I did think for one point, and I wasn't sure if I were making this episode, and I'm not. I would have just kept changing the Jedi who are in the background, just kind of like Firefly, and then one of those outtakes of just like you just like wait, who is that? Haven't seen them in a while.
So basically people walk around in the woods. Everyone is looking for a Wookiee who has been away for quite a while. The Jedi have like a space otter with them who's going to help them track things.
Can I interject breaking news that I discovered during this?
He's also a temple guardian?
He's not a temple guardian, but he is a race that was introduced in the EU novel. Han Solo's Revenge, a Brian Daly Han Solo.
Is he the same kind of space otter that there's that awesome book cover where Han Solo is fighting like a giant space otter that is like bedecked in jewels?
Is that from? I want to say that's from the comics.
What are you talking about?
Dan, that's a novel. Hold on.
All right. Everyone,
keep it
on.
Recaps. All right, let me just to be clear, I Google searched Space Otter Han Solo, and I immediately got an awesome image that is exactly what was imprinted in my head. Are Salonians, and this was not a Salonian, so.
Oh, yes, I have seen this one.
What is that? Okay, so folks,
that's from a novel, not a comic, right?
What novel is that from?
Han Solo fights a space otter.
What I love about this the way they're punching looks like they're punching like at invisible people on either side of them.
Well, it's very comic book cover punching.
Who punches like that? It more looks like he's part of Flashdance. Like he is like breaking free, and this is really just like choreographed finale. What book is that from?
The book, it is from Assault at Salonia.
Oh, I've
the
read
space
that.
Space otters are Salonians. So this is a
they were space
all right
otters?
So this descent into space otter thing is mainly we
that
both
was
do
one
everyone
of those stupid was it the black fleet?
I read all those. They
everybody loves
good.
When we pause the podcast. No, they're
the
not. Corellian
trilogy.
Not
that one.
That's when the whole family goes to the Corellian trilogy. We finally like dive into the history of like how he got those blood stripes.
It's basically they go on like a family vacation.
Yeah.
And then the vacation gets interrupted when dad has to fight some space otters.
I was gonna say, the title, the cover I remember that I had was very different from that one.
Yeah, I don't, and I definitely read them all, but I don't remember the space otters being a thing.
Guys, okay, also, this is not the same novel, just to be
clear. Not the same otter, even. the space otter aside is irrelevant.
Not all otters. Not all otters, Tony.
I just want to say, I had a fold-out poster of Han Solo fighting that space otter that I found a few months ago, and I was just like, I'm just going to recycle this.
Oh,
I don't mean
that. Yeah. I would have kept that one.
I was
going
to say, I thought you were going to say you framed it.
No, I was, especially, it was that, you know, it was like a poster that shipped with, like, it was clearly, because I was the kind of nerd who had a subscription to Star Wars Insider magazine in the 90s, and you would get posters in every issue, but they'd be posters that had been folded to fit
like National Geographic.
Yeah, which are not the best posters. So
I'm so sorry anyway, that just, one. We could have like auctioned it off on the show.
No, I'm okay. I just looked at it and had memories of a space otter, and I was like, and you know what? You've done your job, poster, and now you can go free into the recycling bin.
So Dan, tell us more about what these are if they're not Solonius.
I was gonna say the EU Wikipedia page on them is surprisingly lengthy. they're Tynans, T-Y-N-N-A-N. They are from the novel Han Solo's Revenge, which was by Brian Daley, but they also appeared in a couple
of things.
They hate
being, when people refer to them as Solonians.
Yeah. Or they're like tiny Solonians.
They're actually at war with the Solonians. It's a feud going back millennia.
Oh, it's like a Romulans Remans thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or a Romulan Vulcan thing. Or a Romulan Vulcan Reman thing. It's
like Romulan Reman thing is much well. There's good Romulan Vulcan stories. There's bad Romulan Reman. There are no good
Romulan
Reman
stories. Yes, correct.
No, it's just you know. Anyway,
this is a tight
recap. I have mentioned that they have an otter, and then we have gone on an otter digression that was longer than my recap so far.
All I'm thinking about is, like, what are the decisions that I have made that have brought me to this moment right now, and how much do I regret them?
Good ones. Yeah. They're very good.
Yeah, I mean, you walked into the room recently. you sat down in that chair. What really has brought any of us here today? People have chosen to listen to this. All right.
Tinians, got it.
Yeah, so they're walking through the woods. There's some stuff that happens. The Jedi have to slice a bug in half, which is kind of actually kind of sad that they're like, oh, I almost felt like it was the inverse of, you know, I was thinking as they were walking through the woods, if this was an episode of The Bad Batch, they would have to fight a giant monster. And they fight a giant bug, but they're sad about it, as opposed to The Bad Batch would just be like, oh, it's a giant bug. What are you going to do? Can I just kind of jump ahead to, like, eventually everybody arrives at Kelnaka's hut, but surprise, Kelnaka already dead.
And we did see him
by
alive.
By a lightsaber.
We did see
by
him
a lightsaber.
Alive earlier in the episode.
Yeah, we did see him briefly alive earlier in this episode and in the two episodes ago, which were kind of weird scenes now, but I guess just to establish that he
Tony,
hasn't been dead there for years.
How do you feel about the fact that we spent so much time on him on those first two episodes instead of waiting until this episode? Do you still stay behind your previous statement?
I think
you can't.
Between this episode, between this Jedi and the, you know, the guy that was just meditating, it's a little bit like, do I care about any Jedi that is not? It's hard when it's like Jedi that has zero backstory, carry on Mos Jedi that has like four lines of, like one line of backstory, and then Saul, who seems great.
Or does he? We'll find out.
All right. Anyway, the rest of my recap will cover the last few minutes of this episode, which is May is in the house, which is really bad for her because there's a dead Jedi Master in the house, or Jedi Knight at least. And the Jedi are all outside the house, and they're like, you have to come out, we're Jedi cops. And there's a great scene where, like, Osha is in the behind the Jedi because they're like, you're not a Jedi, you can't be up front with, you know, you can't be 10 feet over here where all the Jedi are. And something kind of like floats down out of focus behind her, and we turn around and there's a super spooky person in a black helmety
Voldemort like entrance
spooky time mask, and they're really close to Osha, and they ignite a red lightsaber real close to Osha, and all of the Jedi, I don't even know how many there are, it seems like maybe 10 of them, light their green and blue and yellow lightsabers and are like, well, you know, this isn't going to go great for you. One guy with a red lightsaber, and he, like, force pushes them all, and there's a giant cloud of dust.
He does kind of the same trick that Mei does at the end of episode 2. Yeah. It was kind of cool. Yeah, that was perhaps one of the I will say that I think that was the creepiest entrance anyone has ever had in Star Wars.
And it is, you know, the Sith are all about making entrances.
Yeah,
that's all they know. That, entrances and exits. Yeah.
They love them, you know?
I'm just saying... If you don't interact with the Sith for another like 10 minutes afterwards, they're like, this guy's not so great.
But also
they have a lot of meetings to discuss staging and choreography.
Great mass with the gears that look like a smile, but like venom, just like great entrance out of focus of like the idea of you feel like something's behind you.
Yeah, out of focus and no sound.
Very good.
I think those two things together work very effectively.
Capes. Yeah. Capes.
The billowing. Yeah. Billowing is really
everyone loves billowing. So, kind of a strange episode. It's a little, on the short side, which I always get a little worried when a Star Wars thing is like, why aren't you using more of the whatever? But it's streaming, so you can make your episode as long or as short as you want, I guess. We are right in the middle. This is episode 4 of 8. And I always feel like that's a little bit of a place where some of these series kind of sag, and they have a lot of like, this is the part where we are working backward toward the end.
Yeah.
And so stuff is a little bit more like
squishy middle.
Yeah.
Soggy,
squishy middle. And you know, it not a ton happens in this one. There's some meetings. There's some walking through the woods. There's a little bit, you know, walking through the woods does give you some time to have some chats. So May, and how do we say his name?
Chimer.
Yeah, they have some chats about basically like, aren't the rules that we're dealing with kind of weird and wacky?
Yeah.
What's the deal with this?
I would say our recap's over. So let's dive into that. I would love to talk both about, like, let's talk about both May and then let's also talk about Osho and sort of their various.
Yeah.
Because I think Dan and I were watching, I think there were the conversation with May and her friend was like really, really interesting. And I think the thing that surprised me the most is just how much, like, she was like, I don't need to go do this. Like, after she was meditating for a second, I was like, I just don't need to do this.
I did not see that coming. I did not see
that coming at all. I was like, wow, that's weird.
And it kind of feels like that she's kind of been doing this. I think two things. One, I hope we eventually get her backstory because, like, she clearly she's not really a believer.
Yeah.
It seems like basically if she doesn't do this, she's going to be killed.
Well, also seems like she did this for purported revenge because she thought her sister was dead. But since her sister isn't dead, she's like, wait a second.
Why am I doing this?
It's a little weird because like she does go to this planet and she's like walking around in the woods for like a long time. And I mean, I guess I just feel like that's not something you usually see narratively where it's like, I have to walk a long way in the woods. And like halfway there, I just decide, this is stupid. I'm going to leave.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. Like,
you just described every walk in the woods I've ever taken, Tony.
It is the road less traveled.
Yeah, the whole premise of my undertaking this episode was stupid. They have some weird conversations where, I mean, she's about, for example, because there is the thing that has been said where she has to kill one of these Jedi without a weapon, and they... And like, what's the deal with this Sith guy? Basically?
Well, it also, I'll let Dan say his theory about grammar.
Well, it's not theory. I can't tell if this is deliberate or not. But in listening to them talk about it, I was like, wait a second, this has been phrased this way every time. And the question to me was, do you have to kill a Jedi by not using a weapon, or do you have to kill a Jedi who does not have a weapon? Because killing a Jedi without a weapon is ambiguous, right? Which one it means. And at one point she talks about it being impossible because it involves like provoking, like she has to provoke the Jedi. And I started being like, wait a second, who has the weapon in this case or who doesn't have the weapon? And it felt very confusing. And I'm not sure if that is a script weakness or that is a deliberate obfuscation happening. And there's a few of those things in this episode that struck me as kind of like, is this the script doing something or is the script like, is the script, without being reductive, is the script dumb or is the script smart? And that comes into play with I think we'll just drop the first of our sort of conspiracy, not very conspiracy
theories. Seems like there's a clear conspiracy
theory here. One, subscribe and like. Like and subscribe.
Yeah, smash that subscribe button, etc.
There's no buttons in podcasts.
No, on this video, so, right here, where I'm pointing, we're going to have, and here, this is, and here, we're going to have a button.
We don't release this as a video.
Imagine a button. So obvious possible candidates for the Sith Lord are literally one. It's Kymer. Like, if it's not, then that's super convenient that guy showed up, right? Like, right there.
Yeah.
What's the character's name? The actor's name again?
Manny Jacinto.
Okay. Manny Jacinto as a Sith Lord is, like, one of the best castings of all
time. I'm 100% here for it.
Yeah, 100%.
But it is the moment where you're like, is this just a very obvious twist, or is it the script, like, giving us that as a red herring?
It wasn't very obvious until this episode, right?
But it was extremely obvious in this episode.
Yeah, well,
it is
all the question
obvious
of, like,
in this episode.
Like, what did you bargain? He's like, I was just something else. I didn't bargain with that. Yeah. Sort of like, he was very cagey about that.
I've never seen his face, except in the mirror every day.
Yeah. No, I mean, literally, he's the one character, like, unaccounted for.
Who knows how to find the guy.
Or Basil.
And he
could be Basil, you're right.
It could be Basil.
Don't write a Basil.
Introduced in this episode. Also, is Basil a Jedi, or is he just
he's a civilian. He's wearing the civilian robes.
So he's a contractor. Okay. Yeah.
They have specific robes.
Yeah, I mean...
Could have been one of the Mani Jedi too. Like, we couldn't, unless you were keeping track of all 17 Jedi, could have been any of them.
But it can't, could be any of them. See them face off at the end.
Yeah, well, but were you counting all the Jedi?
They weren't using the buddy system. Who knows?
I mean, I think if you wanted to create mystery about it, what you would have done was have them separated or some way that they're like, oh no, like, but.
Yeah, and one of the Jedi sneaks away and does a costume change behind a tree. So I was
gets
even
caught
a little
by
confused.
Another Jedi as they're putting on a helmet.
Yeah. It's a real Mandalorian problem. I was a little confused as to what the inciting incident even was that suddenly everyone is running through the woods, right?
Because
at first everyone's walking through the woods and then somebody screams.
I thought it was May.
It's Basil. Oh, sorry. There's a part where Basil finds May.
Yes, but I thought the first scream was May trying to get her friend to sprint through to then get caught in the snare.
Yes.
And that's what I thought it was. Yeah, and that the other Jedi, because they don't know the other Jedi are there.
Right. But the other Jedi hear that.
Yes.
I also thought at first that was going to be the situation was going to be that was her example of like, oh, here's how I kill a Jedi without a weapon. I set a trap. Is a trap a weapon? Let's dig into this.
Yeah.
Jedi, notoriously unreliable and easily caught by snare traps.
Yeah.
So that was, definitely enjoyed that. And I agree with you, that was the big conspiracy theory.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
It's weird as a twist.
Yes.
I am prepared for this show as it has evolved a little bit and given the background of the person making the show, I am prepared for that to, like, not matter, I guess, or not be a big twist so much as, like, this is just a thing that we're building our story with.
Kinda I like think he's also managing those too young to really be the Sith Lord.
The nature of this Sith Lord is, I mean, this is a time when there basically aren't Sith Lords.
Right.
And, like,
but how could he have rescued her? Right, he's roughly
he?
The same age.
Do we know that?
No, we don't. We don't. Oh, speaking of which, okay, Saul's last line to May of like, when we get safe and back to the spaceship, I'll tell you everything. Means like, okay, Saul. Like, Saul's
could you
dying
write
now.
It down? Yeah, Saul. Can you please just write?
Also,
could you like,
Saul? Have you ever watched Game of Thrones?
This also means that Saul knows more. Right,
yes.
Knows more of what I mean, or he's like, oh, I never told you how much you mean to me. Like, it could be total red herring, but it also now implies that Saul knows more about what actually happened on that planet.
And here is the thing that I find interesting about this story, in the same way as, you know, I think about mystery stories, and you can approach that in various ways. I think most traditionally you have like the sort of the whodunit, right? But like, I like Rian Johnson's Poker Face, which also stars Natasha Lyonne, who starred in the maker of this show's Russian Doll, etc., is the how catch him, which is the you see, you know who killed them, you know how they did it, but it's how is that story get unfolded and how do they catch, and like how do they find out that person did it? And to me, the mystery is not necessarily who is the Sith Lord, but like I have more questions at that point, like how did he become, if the Sith are extinct, who is this guy? Was he a Jedi? Was he trained as a Jedi? Was he Are there other Sith out there? Like, and that's okay. I'm interested in that. And that still provides, I think, interesting levels of story, plus all the Saul stuff. And like, he has the conversation with Vernestra where he's like,
they
seriously, I thought I saw her die. Like, I saw her fall. Like, there's a lot of questions around all
this. And we still can't tell anybody about this.
Yeah.
I can send like 12 Jedi to this planet to possibly die, but I cannot tell my boss about this because there would be paperwork. They would have to tell the Senate. It's, you know.
Well, to that point, like, that was the entire conversation we had last week of, like, to me, it was very clear with that entire tangent that the Jedi are playing politics, right? And you have to play politics in order to survive. It's like, oh, this is the beginning of the end. Also interesting, though, in that same speech, talking about this potentially being a splinter group, which again goes back to our conversation, I feel like, of the organized religion sort of metaphor. And the fact that, again, A, they have splinter groups, and B, they do not have any patience for splinter groups or acceptance.
The other thing, so two other things. One, another twist, quote unquote, that I found interesting in this episode was I actually was genuinely surprised that he was already dead. Like, once she gets in there and sees the like from behind, is like, oh, he's already dead. But like, I did not expect that to be the case. I expected there to be some sort of confrontation when she went in there. So I thought that was well played.
It is confusing because it's like, why did you get sent to this planet to get like,
but it makes sense again. If he's the Sith Lord, then he just popped himself down and was like, oh, well, I guess I need to murder this guy.
I feel like as soon as that she said she was going to run away, he, who the Sith Lord may not be a man, kills the Wookiee in order to make sure like that her storyline has to be propelled forward, right? I feel like it was very much that the Wookiee didn't get killed until she made that decision.
So I agree with that. However, the problem with that as a narrative device is because I had this moment where it's like, oh,
well, they're going to... He's spookily lurking behind her the entire time.
That's my point, is there's a moment of tension where it's like where she goes in and she's decided, I'm just going to turn myself in. And she goes in, he's already dead. And it's like, no one is going to believe her. If she's like, I found him this way.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be like, no, clearly you murdered them. But it is somewhat like interrupted by the fact that she doesn't have a lightsaber, and then the spooky Sith Lord immediately shows up. If you want to frame her, don't show up at the scene of the crime.
Don't hang out at the crime scene. Wait until all the police show up and then assault them with a lightsaber.
I feel like that's a message though too, because like if she decided she wasn't going to, I think that prevents her from joining forces with the Jedi, right? Because her I think you're like, A, it's a great story device. B, the Sith Lord kills the Wookiee, and therefore she is trapped there. And then, like, when she sees the Sith Lord turns up, rather than being like, you know what, like, I'm going to surrender to the Wookiee, and everyone's going to team up together, and we're going to fight against me, he just took the Wookiee out of the action. I keep using he, I don't know. The Sith Lord takes the Wookiee out of the action, takes Mei out of action, and therefore makes the odds easier for him.
I think there's also...
I think it's just good strategery.
Great strategery. I think there's interesting emotional impact, too, which it's like...
Oh, yeah.
You decided you weren't going to kill this person, and I killed them anyways, so that's kind of on you, right? Like, that is kind of an awful thing to do, right? Which
you
is...
You have no agency
you decide. Yeah, you decided you wanted out, but I'm still going to murder that person that you were sent to murder, so, you know.
I'm willing to believe that the Sith Lord is not 13 steps ahead, exactly 1.5 steps ahead, with a plan to simply drive Mei to madness. More so than to like drive her into conflict with the Jedi Order, right?
I'm
gonna kill that guy, and you're gonna see like the person you were gonna like basically surrender to dead.
Yeah.
That's upsetting. Then I'm gonna kill a bunch of other people. I'm not done killing people yet.
Yeah.
All I do is kill.
It is interesting to get to a point of like, okay, say you are the first Sith Lord in a millennia, and you need to find an apprentice or somebody like, how do you build their psyche or whatever, mess with them to the point where they're willing to cross that line? Like, because you need to find the person who is both like tapped into the power and kind of sensitive to it, but also willing to go to the other side and embrace evil and darkness and anger and all of that. And so you can see why the revenge plot is the beginning of that. If the Sith Lord is planting these seeds of... hey, all these Jedi, they messed with you and they killed your sister and whatever. That's sort of molding her into the weapon. But then she tries to get out of it, and it's like, I've got my hooks in you, so I need to frame you or torture you, mentally torture you in some way in order to convince, like, or drive you mad or convince you that you still need to partner with me in the end. Because how else do you find your chosen subordinate? Like, there aren't, like, Sith apprentices going. It's not like later on where it's like everybody's a Sith apprentice.
Yeah, you just chop hop by Dathomir and grab the latest high school graduate.
I was gonna say I think we're later. Where we're thinking back to is like on the opposite side of the Sith. Can I share my favorite part of this entire episode?
Yeah.
Other than Basil, Yord.
Yord is really good.
Incredibly well cast, incredibly written enough. Just like the line is to cut through A, demanding the blaster back. And then B of like, well, when everyone else is studying Wookiee, I chose the more nuanced language. Like, you are so annoying. It's so good. Yeah. It's so well done.
I do enjoy him a lot. I think he's he's the perfect level of the like poster boy Jedi, right? Who's like, I am prim and proper and I do everything by the book. And I'm going to be interested to see if
we are going to find out that like his parents were Jedi. He's got like a legacy Jedi.
He's a Nepo baby
vibes. He's a Nepo Jedi. Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was interesting in regards to Kel Naka earlier in the episode, when we first meet him and he's still alive. He has got on all the walls of his little hut.
Yeah.
The symbols that May has.
Yeah. Of the circles.
Yeah. And it's like a yin yang. Yeah. There's a couple different versions of it, but it's definitely supposed to be that.
Well, it kind of goes back to the interesting idea, and I wonder if they'll delve into this, and it kind of what the witches say at the beginning of that people think they're evil, and I think the talking about the balance of the Force, and I think the Jedi, I think at least from the are familiar with canon, right, is the Republic was overbalanced towards the light, and so the Empire was sort of the great correcting, sure? And so this is essentially... maybe him realizing that maybe the witches, there's some sort of middle ground that really is like working in balance. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting so for us to get the idea of the balance of the Force.
And there was a line or two about basically like, yeah, no one's heard from him in years.
Yes.
He doesn't reply to his email. So he's kind of in like self-imposed exile, maybe?
Well, then this jibes with...
The other guy.
Tobin?
Yeah.
Was that his name?
Yeah, Tobin.
Yeah, where it's like, Kel Naka is carrying something as the outcome of that incident.
Yeah.
That has, he's stayed with him to the point that he's not only become like an ascetic sort of, but also is diving into what is the nature of what the witches Force, were doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting.
And unfortunately, maybe we'll never get to talk to him about it.
Maybe they all pop. I would say they all pop up as Force ghosts, but apparently only Qui-Gon is the first one to figure out how to do that in a long time. So,
is that what they,
that's canonically?
Oh, in Clone
remember,
Wars,
because he teaches Yoda, and he shows up at the end of the Obi-Wan series
then,
to be like.
And then they teach everybody. Dude. It's like it's actually really easy. There's just like, you know, Jedi Masters hate this one trick. That let you come back. As
there's one checkbox in the settings that you need to.
Yeah.
It's like your organ donation.
Like it would be one thing. Like for example, it'd be one thing. It's like you get to do it once. Make sure you use it real strategically. But like Obi-Wan is around all the time. You know? He gets multiple visits. That's not fair.
They really would like me to leave, but I'm here.
Yeah. I have nowhere to go.
I think overall what I really liked about this episode is like I love walking in the woods and like character. I love anything that's just character development, right? Like we're really using this to have some conversations, paint some pictures with our folks, go a little deeper. And I think I was most surprised by this overall episode that May is not nearly as evil as folks think she is. Like she's much more conflicted. This isn't the dark side that we are familiar with. Yeah, that she's very much not just along for the ride, but she is, especially in compared to like say Elspeth Morgan, like other people we've seen in previous shows, that she is, I think in some ways doing horrible acts, but really uncertain about it. And that was a very unexpected but nice evolution.
I thought it was interesting that I think Keimer points out like you still murdered like two Jedi, right? Like you're still gonna be in trouble, and she's kind of like, I do not think I'm gonna take my chances.
Yeah.
Which I thought was as an interesting,
and all the things I know I'll tell them.
Yeah.
It's also like I feel like interesting in a work of fiction that like she just kind of has that epiphany like walking through the woods. It's not like she's in a fight to the death with her sister and her sister has to scream at her like you were wrong about everything and you were right, I reject my life, you know. It's just like, no, this is, I don't like,
Yeah, it's much more human in reality.
That thing like, I saw a couple days ago, and I don't like this anymore. I'm going home.
I will say the other thing I found interesting about this episode, there's a couple, they hit this a couple times. Osha mentions that she has her, like, her force powers are coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, she hasn't, like, because she senses the beetle thingy.
Yeah.
And then there was a really good piece of work here early on. When Saul goes to find her, she's left, right, in Coruscant.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need you to come with me on the mission. And she's like, you want me to rejoin the Order? And the look on her face, I thought was really, like, it was some excellent acting. Because it looks like her saying, like, there's hopefulness in there.
Yeah.
Essentially. Because we kind of know why she left and, like, she's kind of resigned to it. But it's the first idea that we get that she's maybe not happy about it, that she did want to stay. And I thought that was kind of a subtle bit of work there from Amanda Stenberg, where she's like, wait, you want me back? And then she's like, realizes she's essentially bait, you know, and then she's a lot less enthused about it at that point.
Cut to her with the best grimace ever in her civilian robes. Yes. Again, also, why do the Jedi have civilian robes?
We're going to dress you up. It's very funny. And I liked her I like her relationship with Jekki as well. I think the two of them are a fun pair where they're like chatting during the briefing. And they're like, oh, no, good briefing. Yeah.
Great briefing. Yeah.
So I thought that was a lot of fun. I think those two have a good rapport.
It was a good episode, I thought.
And maybe when Saul dies, they'll be good friends.
We don't know he's going to die.
We don't know he's going to die, but we've killed every other Jedi Master.
All right. Also, one thing that also made me laugh, going back to our previous episode, when the green lady, I forget her name.
Vernestra.
Is talking to Saul about, like, well, and Saul's like, I know she's dead. Like, no one could have survived that fall. And they turn to two Jedi who are whispering. It clearly could have been like, doesn't Saul know that if you don't find the body?
Yeah. Jedi survive falls all the time. There's a little Easter egg cameo there in that scene as well.
Yes.
Of Ki-Adi-Mundi.
What's his name?
Shows up in the background. Yes.
Which is... Well,
there was also... I don't know if it was Plo Koon or...
Yes,
just
I did see
like Plo
one
Koon,
that looked like Plo Koon, yeah.
Which I always think Plo Koon is a particularly cool character design, so...
I like him. He's a good character, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if that was canonically him or not. But yeah, I enjoy seeing some familiar Jedi faces.
Yeah, they don't need to talk. They can just walk by in the background.
Yeah.
You know, Yoda scurries past late for a meeting back when he cared about being on time for meetings 100 years ago.
Yoda in this era is like out back smoking cigarettes. Like,
no, he's
only
real
800.
Like, yeah, he's real, like, 80s, corporate raider, working real hard, getting his numbers up guy.
It takes the
Jedi
point
very seriously.
In the Star Wars databank episode, they have a quote specifically from Ki-Adi-Mundi where when Qui-Gon Jinn talks about the Sith attacking during Phantom Menace, he says, impossible, the Sith have been extinct for a millennium, which suggests that perhaps word of this particular fight may not make it back to the Jedi Council. How much cover-ups are we doing?
Parts of the paperwork are redacted, you know. We were attacked by a blank.
It's
possible
that none of the Jedi make it back.
Well, it's also an interesting...
The show just ends.
Well, here. No, it could end up just being Osha, and...
May, and... Yeah.
So, I mean, not to want to project too far forward, because I don't, you know, I kind of enjoy seeing how this unfolds, but it does raise the question of, at the end of this, what is the chain... So if this is 100 years before the Phantom Menace, and by the time of the Phantom Menace, we have Darth Sidious basically as the reigning Sith Master. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what the chain is that leads from this current Sith Lord to that. So even if mm-hmm. they kill this guy, will there be someone else to take? I mean, if Mei is his apprentice, then there isn't another apprentice. I'm just kind of interested in how this all shakes out.
Yeah.
I assume this is a thing covered in EU stuff, but
the Sith here, right? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, except, I mean, the whole thing of the only two there are, we know that's, sure. And then, like, it also, we may not be the Sith. Like, we are jumping to inclusion there. Also, there may be several orders of the Sith, just like there are several orders of the Jedi and Splinter Sith. So
it's my favorite Xbox series.
I'm excited to patiently see what happens here and not jump to any conclusions.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting to think about just sort of how the Sith evolve, if this is a Sith, how the Sith evolves,
yeah,
how we end up from this, because I feel like the point is like, and maybe, you know, just sort of thinking of the tone of the ending of the show potentially being like, well, even if we beat this guy or lady or being, that we didn't really win. We know the Jedi fall anyways. We know the Sith eventually do rise. So there's a kind of a, by the very nature of where the story is positioned, there is a bittersweet ending, I think, to come. So I'm intrigued to see how that plays out. Any other thoughts or comments or things on this episode?
No, that's good. Enjoyed it. Looking forward to next week.
Let's jump to some mail. Once again, you can email us at acp@theincomparable.com. We have one letter this week, which is from Food Science Dave.
Hi, Dave. Huh?
This is titled Spoilers for Acolyte Episode 4, Possibly Crazy Pants Theory.
I am in.
Hi, guys. Apologies if you already discussed this today, but I'd like your thoughts on something I've just worked out with my extra red string in Conspiracy Corner.
Oh, yeah.
You're barring our corner. It's nice. I can't tell if it's obvious, insightful, or just crazy pants. My phone won't let me send screenshots, but at 2:08 in episode 4, Kelnaka is walking in front of some diagrams in his home. They look like they represent dyads, although they also remind me of drawings of a zygote and a yin-yang symbol. They also all feature many individual dots around the dyad or to its side. My wife watches with the captions on, so I noticed that they describe the background music as, quote, mysterious music intensifies, unquote. Parentheses, it reminded me of the secret door music from Zelda, for what it's worth. I think Kelnaka is contemplating / theorizing about force-driven immaculate conception, in quotes, trying to understand what and why the witches were doing. At 2:26, the camera focuses on additional diagrams of groups of multiple dots without a dyad. This time the caption says, ominous music, and then it circle wipes to the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. If camera transitions to Game of Thrones have taught me anything, the show has to be tying the ominous music and dyadless diagram to the Jedi, right? And saying it's a bad thing? Maybe the witches created the twins as part of a natural process to keep the Force balanced rather than for personal power. Finally, I'll put my chips in on Jason from Good Place being the Dark Master. I think this whole time he's been doing a Yoda in the Swamp on May. Thanks for the show, Food Science Dave.
Yeah, that's... I like what I think he took what we were talking about even further, and I forgot about the idea of the diet and the immaculate conception. I could see that is what he is contemplating, the Wookiee, of like what the immaculate conception, what they were doing, in addition to sort of just generally the witches in general. You are absolutely right that last one did not have the dyad. Mm-hmm.
Some of them look like Mei's tattoo.
Yeah, do we ever go back? Did any of you actually Google what was on Mei's tattoo or what was on the mother's tattoo and if it had the dyad or if it was without the dyad? Because I think that's what we're trying to figure out too, of which one it is. Din is Googling now real quick.
Google.
It's hard because it's covered by hair. The abysses, the mothers is going to be abysses. The mothers will be the best.
Yeah, because when we see Mei's, there's one scene where she's fighting at the very beginning when she fights Carrie-Anne Moss, where we get kind of a good view of it. But I think it's a fleeting one. Here is Mother Anasea, who does have one also kind of more prominently. And hers is just circles, I think. It kind of looks, well, no, maybe there is a little bit there.
Yeah, it looks like
hard to tell.
That one has, it looks like a dyad.
And she has that interesting sort of makeup, too, where it's kind of bisects her chin, too. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Which also feels like a duality thing happening.
Yeah.
Which does seem to jibe with the twins theory. Maybe.
And also even like the logo for the show, right? With the,
yeah.
The
part of me wonders if, I mean, we talked about this too last time with the in the flashback where they talk about how the girls have the thing where they say like, oh, there's no me without you, etc. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think what she did was essentially split.
Well, that's what we had been talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So the, like, again, sort of the complementary soul aspect of like she split them into, I mean, good and evil seems too reductive, but separate aspects of the same being.
Yeah, yin and yang could be. Yeah, you know,
it's fascinating. I'm intrigued. There's an interesting storyline happening there.
Yeah. If I can't find a copy of May's tattoos,
I'm looking at tattoos. So
couldn't see if May's tattoo has the dyad or not. That would be interesting, and I'll have to keep an eye out for next time we see it close up. I guess it would be from the scene with the Ascension is when you actually really get, I think, your best shot of that tattoo. And if that one does not have the dyad, I think that's super interesting. But regardless, very interesting. I am excited to see, if we go into this broader talk of, like, what are the witches practicing? Is it evil? Is it balanced? And what was the Wookiee meditating on?
Good questions all.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We also have some messages on Mastodon where we are acp@zeppelin.flights. And I will apologize here because several people responded as well. Last week's episode, if you downloaded it early, you got a version with some audio problems. Sorry about that. Obviously, it's been fixed. If you missed it, go back and re-download it. You can hear it all without Tony's track cutting out every 10 seconds due to my incompetence.
Let's blame the plugin.
We can blame the plugin, but I should have checked. I should have spot checked it. Santiago wrote in, the debate of whether Jedi's kidnap children reminded me of a series of articles written in-universe on HoloNet News regarding a supposedly orphan child who was taken by the Jedi, who later refused to return her when her mother appeared. I don't think it's canon, but it was the first time I saw anything official that questioned the order in such way. And so this is stuff from, I don't even know when, a long time ago, very clearly. But they have almost like an Onion-style thing where they like talk to like random people about like your opinions on it. Very strange. Kind of cool, though. I will retweet that over on the... on the ACP account if you're looking for it. Noel writes, wait, are Star Wars fans really having a hard time with understanding the downfall of a regime can happen quickly? Both the fall of the Republic and the Empire were measured in decades. Yeah. I mean, the Empire actually doesn't end up lasting that long, right? It lasts, what?
Well, less than
30 years, about 25 years.
As long as the
USSR. I mean, I isn't that basically
shorter,
classic? Yeah. Isn't that basically classic dictatorship that, you know, how does a dictatorship really last more than one generation?
We measure it in heads of lettuce.
Yeah. Oh, reference acknowledged.
Thanks. This will age well. Theresa May reference for those of you who don't get that reference.
Yeah. This was like seven prime ministers ago. Phil writes, just clicked conservation of characters. The masked Sith is Khmer. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yes. We all agree. Probably. Most likely candidate, certainly.
Or Basil.
It's not Basil.
You don't know that.
I think we see him at the same time.
Yeah.
There's only one of them moving really fast.
It's his twin, Basil.
The first scene in the next episode is Basil getting like cut in half with a lightsaber.
that's just how he fakes his own death, so you don't know it's
him. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to be clear...
Would that helmet even fit over his...
So we do know, like...
He's a lot shorter than that guy.
It is possible that Basil is the one that kills the Wookiee.
I guess I can technically not rule that out.
Because he's there right before May gets there?
Is he? I don't
know.
Rule that out. I don't
he does get there.
But I can't argue with you.
May falls down into like the powdery shrooms things.
The spores.
Let me update what I just said. I'm not going to argue with you about this.
This episode does at least seem to eliminate the brief hell theory I think that we had, Kat, in discussing that Saul was a possible candidate as well, since he is... literally facing off with that guy.
I did have that theory at the start of the episode where Saul was actually the big bad.
But it does not. I don't think it holds water.
I'm still going to say that theory so that in case I'm right later, I can claim credit.
Just mark that one down.
Tony just rolled his eyes so much at me.
yeah.
Finally.
Fairly. Very fairly.
finally, Trevor writes in. I may just be a desert planet lawyer that doesn't know about these things, but two questions, if you'll allow it, Your Honor. One, why do so many of these Sith and Inquisitors wear masks? I mean, Darth Vader wore one because he has lava-induced emphysema. What's the deal with the rest of them? Two.
I think it's tradition. Oh, sorry. Do we answer
two.
One question?
Is there a limited, we... Related. Second and related question.
Related.
Two, who picked out Darth Smiley's mask? Did they choose that, or was their master playing a joke on him when they gave him that mask? The prosecution rests. Defense, your witness.
I mean, I think some of it is tradition. You know, we clearly have the thing where a lot of Sith have secret identities, right?
Yes.
Where they don't want
except Darth
that.
Maul.
I think, yeah, except Darth Maul. Well, but he was an apprentice, right? That was the, you know.
So was Dooku, technically.
Doesn't Darth Maul get he gets a secret identity later, right? Doesn't he have a different name later?
Maul?
No, when he's with Ezra, what does he call himself?
When he calls himself Old Master.
Yes.
Oh,
when he's with Ezra and Rebels.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is just general spookiness. It's clearly some of them have horrible... I feel like there is a theme of villain origin stories where, you know, you hang out too close to lava, fire, acid, or things that explode. That was kind of the kind of amusing reveal in the sequel trilogy where Kylo Ren is not horribly disfigured, right?
Yes.
And you kind of think he is, and then he's just a guy. Just a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, as you pointed out, I think a lot of it is the secret identity because you don't want to wander around just as your open identity as a Sith Lord or evil being. Part of it is, I think it is theatricality, right? Like, it's scary. If Manny Jacinto had floated down there in the back, I don't think we would have been as scared.
Jacksonville Checkers rule.
Portals.
Portals.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a good question because we don't really know.
I mean, why
know...
do they always wear all black, right? You know?
Yeah. Why aren't there any
tradition?
Rainbow...
Why always red lightsabers, right?
Like tradition.
Well, there's a whole thing about how the lights...
I feel like Sith
is that canon
just...
anymore?
I don't know.
I think they can have whatever lightsaber they want, and they just have red because it's spooky. Yeah.
What were you going to say, Kat?
No, I just feel like, so for a... The entire argument often for the Sith is that the Jedi are too controlling and like you'll never achieve your full power if like you have to follow these rules and then like you can join us, but you have to wear black, you have to wear a mask, and you have to have a red lightsaber. I'm like, this is...
And also you can only have two people.
Yeah, right? It's like, it's
way... Well, the two people was later. There was just like a whole race of people for a while.
Yeah, I don't remember how much of that is canon in the new...
I don't know how much of that's
either.
Canon. Is Exar Kun canon at all anymore?
I don't think so.
Okay. There's no... Okay.
I don't know, though.
Exar Kun was like... Am I remembering correctly? He was basically the first Sith or
He is
first
one
Sith?
Of them. He's from the Jedi Apprentice trilogy, right? The one with... I forget what his name is. Kip something?
There was some sweet... There were some really sweet comics about him and going to war against Mandalorian.
Tales of the Old Republic?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't even know how much of the stuff was sort of ancient... Jedi Sith stuff is actually canon anymore, so
fine.
We don't really know very much about the Sith sort of...
That is cool. This is probably like your first intro outside of, I'm sorry, the new,
like, who
too,
is especially if there's the only Sith like are. Two who's out there making all these holocrons kicking around, right? Who is the Sith librarian putting together holocrons?
There's
Sith temples, right? Like,
yeah,
at some point they had to have
Or
a whole class of artisans.
They were just really good at procurement and construction.
Okay. You think it was outsourced? Do you think that temple was all outsourced?
Yeah.
All those people got killed.
Yeah, 100%. No, but I think it's interesting. This will be your first introduction, really, the Sith on screen outside of the typical canon. So that'll be cool. I'm excited. Or again, they may not be Sith. They may just be the thing the Sith are cool. Maybe they're disguised as the Sith.
Oh, they're Sith fanboys? Wannabes?
I don't want to spoil stuff, but I think I saw that like there's an upcoming episode that's just called Sith. So
okay.
You know.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly. I also feel like there's other people that were cast in this that we haven't seen yet. I'm trying not to bring any of that in.
Do we have to put a spoiler tag now on this episode because Tony revealed that
Tony used the word Sith.
Yeah. I mean Sith happens.
Yeah. Dan, is there more mail?
That was it. We're out of mail.
Oh, okay.
It's a little light this week. The mailbag was a little light.
Does anyone else have strong feelings about why Sith wear hats?
I mean, chime in.
If you were a Sith Lord, what would you wear?
Oh, that I thought you asked what your name was going to be.
No, God, no. Much more, what would you wear? Like,
they ran through the good names real fast. They're not... I mean, they're all... They all just read like Darth's. He's not even a Sith. He's just a general.
Wait, why is he called Darthan?
He's not. Darth Grievous? Not. There is no Darth Grievous.
You're thinking of Grievous, the droid general.
General Grievous.
General uh-huh. Grievous. Thank well, you.
He's
sorry.
Not a, he's Please. A general sorry. Of droids.
His father was himself, Darth Grievous. Not a,
yeah. yeah.
No, I think the question I have for our listeners is, like, if you were a Sith Lord, like, what would you wear? Right? Like, what? Who would you model yourself after?
All right. Let me just do Gold a quick LeMay. Check-in here. Worst Sith Lord names.
Are we ranking?
Well, I just want to see where you all stand.
No, they're all bad. Let's be clear. They're all bad.
I will say, I think the one from Knights of the Old Republic might be the least bad, and it's still not great. Darth Revan or Revan?
That's fine.
It's just fine. A made-up word, right?
I mean, I think it probably is. It's like it's an anagram of Raven. Right, so I feel like it's still got a
they all have like
a French word. It reminds me of the Reavers from like Firefly.
Yeah, they all have a spookiness, right? I think we can agree, Darth Plagueis.
Oh yeah, bottom of the barrel.
Darth you Bane. Know,
nope.
Yeah, Darth Bane, no good. Is How that, did that not, get out of committee?
But not no relation to Cad Bane,
and no relation to Bane from Batman.
Yeah,
no. They're all unrelated. They get that a lot. They have to explain to them. Has to explain
they
that
both
a lot.
Like hats.
Darth Sidious.
Overplayed.
It's just insidious with the IN taken off.
Yeah.
Derivative.
Darth Tyrannus. There's just something about when he says Darth Tyrannus.
The only thing that's good about
had you ever said that out loud before you said that to like Obi-Wan for the first time?
The only reason that Darth Tyrannus could even remotely be a good name is so he doesn't have to go by Count Dooku.
Well, yeah,
it also reminds me. If it's not like the Tyrannus, there's a sea somewhere in the Mediterranean that has a very similar name.
It's also
the Tyrannian Sea.
I think that
clearly
it's clearly from
Tyrannosaurus.
yeah, or
I like to think Tyrannian Sea. Like George Lucas was on vacation word. In the Mediterranean somewhere.
It's just the Latin word for tyrant.
Yeah,
right?
I like to think that Christopher Lee just really loved dinosaurs. Like
just love dinosaurs.
I thought about Stegosaurus, but it seemed a little on the nose.
Darth Malak. Not so
no.
good.
No, it's just a name.
Yeah.
Malak is a...
apparently, I don't remember this one, but I think this is from Knights of the Old Republic 2. Dark Nihilius, which is just like...
Nope.
Darth, like,
so
like
nihilist. So all these are Latin words. That's all they
yeah.
are.
And there's no
which is interesting. So that established there's Latin in space. So we
but
got that.
But only for the Sith.
Yeah.
That's so, it. Yeah.
The Sith
there,
are the
there
Romans.
Are some... There are some other darts, but I'm not going to name them.
Yeah.
So we've covered the major darts. So.
So what?
Yeah, honestly, Darth Maul and
Darth Maul's not bad.
Darth Maul's good.
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah.
It's direct. It's to the point, and it's not in Latin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Vader.
Yeah.
And Darth because
Vader's that's, good.
It's the original.
It's the original.
Yeah,
right?
The original. Yeah. I don't even understand what like. Why is Darth... Part of it is, like, why do you need these names? You don't actually talk to each other. Like, especially, we accept that they're basically a code name. Like, why does Darth Sidious need to be Darth Sidious? He's not actually allowed to be Darth Sidious ever. He's the Emperor.
He has it when he talks to the Trade Federation people. At the very
is
beginning of Phantom
then?
Menace.
You
yes,
need a
he
name.
Refers
okay.
to himself,
yeah,
and he refers to Darth Maul as his apprentice.
And if you don't come up with them, like, then the Daily Post is going to come one
they,
for you.
Oh, they
like,
name
what is
you,
it, like, the Spidey Boy or something? You need
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that's how you...
Cloaky McCloak face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's not good.
So you need to choose your own name.
This is why a free and open media is a threat to the dark side. All right. I think we may be smart.
And on that note, do you want to close us out, Dan?
I will happily close us out. All right, here we are halfway through this season. What is left to come? We shall find out, and we shall find out together. As a reminder, if you'd like to send in something for our mailbag, or if you'd like to talk about what your Sith outfit would look like, email us at acp@theencarpal.com or find us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. We would, of course, also like to thank our members, the folks at theincomparable.com/members who have signed up for our many membership programs, which confer magical benefits such as bootleg episodes that get released before they've been edited, extra bonus content, access to the members Discord, all that great stuff. Check out theincomparable.com/members. Sign up today. And finally, I would like to thank my co-host this week, as always, Kat Benish, thanks for being here.
Thank you all. It is a pleasure. Have a great night. And I think my Sith Lord would be like Zorro. That's kind of the vibe I would go for.
Darth Zorro?
Darth Zorro.
Sure. Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Can we say that we can't technically rule out that Batman's not a, a, Sith, right?
Darth Batman?
Yeah.
Darth Batman.
We cannot rule it out. We absolutely don't know that they're not in the same world. If George Lucas wrote it,
he would just be like, Darth Batman is done. Ship it. Make the action.
Darth Wayne-us. You know. Wayne Bruce-us?
That's not good. No.
Not good. No.
And we're done.
All right, everybody. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We will see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Always.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.